more than 100 connections, the Division of Drinking Water Regulation says you shall have redundant source. As we consider any community water system, if you're large enough to serve 100 connections, if you only rely on one source, that's considered high risk. So we require a redundant source. So I was thinking about the risk associated with the water systems that's solely by surplus water. One possible solution, I know we're too early to get into the solution, but I just want to think, share my thoughts. Maybe we can identify if a water system, we know they have more residential connections, and they solely rely on surplus water contract. Maybe one possibility is to add a new rule requirement, say either your community water system, your only water supply is based on surplus water, you shall have a redundant source as a backup. So you don't have, you don't only rely on one water source. That may be a possibility because that's associated with the risk.
I wonder what other people think we need to discover here. I mean, because it's great to hear Helena's in drinking water and Richard's. I wonder what other issues other people think we need to touch on.
Do you have other ideas? And I mean, one of the issues I have and concerns I have is, notwithstanding the contracts, if the city council decides they want to be more focused in the city, what happens?
Because the contracts,
they decide they don't want to supply or they don't want to support that infrastructure outside the city.
The contracts typically have revocation clauses.
So Salt Lake City, for instance, we don't have that for any of our valley customers.
But whether you do or not, my question is...
Well, I understand your question, but I just want to make sure.
If they say there's no fiduciary duty...
Somebody who lives in Holiday comes in, or Compton Heights, they just sign up for service, and we say we'll provide service. So they're not treated any differently than someone like me who lives in Salt Lake City proper. So now we do have the very small handful of Canyon surplus agreements, and those are
different.
Very different.
Yeah.
Matters. I have a sense, Representative Coleman, it sounds like you're primarily interested, and I think that makes sense, of the folks down in the valley where we have, a ton of infrastructure built based on water customers outside of Salt Lake City boundaries. But, Lloyd's not here, or Kent's not here, he's talked about Brigham City apparently has a pretty big factory.
Yes.
Relying on surplus water.
Yeah.
So it's just as you started out, it's so definitely not just Salt Lake City's issue.
Yeah.
Well, boy, really isn't the key is that if you're providing water to subdivisions based upon a surplus contract, the key is, can that ever be revoked? That's a real issue.
Yeah, or can you really, even though you've entered into a contract, can you really do that, and can the contract be enforced if the city council decides they should go another way and stop doing that?
That's the revocation. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Can it be taken back? That's really the issue.
Some of them do have those clauses.
But whether the clauses are there or not, I think the issue is there.
Right. And again, looking at that constitutional prohibition or the obligation to the inhabitants of that municipality. So would that ever come into conflict? A future city council makes a decision to care for its own. That's consistent with the Constitution. What happens to those?
Representative Coleman, when you refer to the Constitution, are you talking about the section that deals with the prohibition of the the sale, or is there another provision that you're looking at?
So no, it's
the alienation.
It's the one that's here.
Right, right. So it does mention the to supply its inhabitants, maintain and operate and supply its inhabitants. So there's all kinds of interpretations around that right now, and I don't know that we get there. I think we
leave that for the other committee.
Leave that for the other committee. But I don't know how. I think we're gonna have to touch on that at least. Because the issues of the contracts, I don't know how we ignore the constitutional, possible constitutional limitations when we discuss the risk inherent in those contracts or inherent in government operations.
And the statute seems to somewhat follow that same thought in that if you have surplus product, you can sell it outside your city, but it seems to be implying that's what you can sell as surplus, and suggesting that there may not be a duty to continue to serve, and that's the concern.
Yeah, it seems to me that one of the big examples is just what Rusty talked about, Salt Lake City providing water service to retail customers outside Salt Lake City boundaries. And how many, in most other areas, they'd be small or limited, but in that case, what would be the population? 100,000? 200,000?
I don't know. It's
a lot big,
more.
Yeah.
It's a lot. 250,000 served, and no contract. City has no contract.
They have contracts.
Individuals, just like I, as an individual, have a contract with the city when I sign up for water. Anybody who lives outside the city, where you're a retail customer, you have the exact same rights that I do.
Yeah.
So they can't turn me off, and arguably we can't turn somebody off in Cottonwood Heights as a customer. That's how we view it.
Where's that written? So is that written that way, where you can't turn them off?
It would depend on what's in that retail connection application contract. And honestly, this is, to some extent, an evolving process for the city. You know, Salt Lake City had water rights coming out of Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon, and so the water was traveling through all these communities to get to downtown Salt Lake, and the state's back 150 years. And so as these communities started to build and develop, they saw our clean water going by, they'd say, could we have some of that? And we said, yeah, we've got enough that we can let you have that. And I think that there may have been some belief or understanding that maybe
they didn't.
Over time they would create their own communities and get their own water, but that's just not the way it happened. And so now all these communities have been built, and from Salt Lake City side, we built the infrastructure to assume that we're going to be supplying these customers for as long as they're going to be supplying to. So just to finish up my thought, we're heading in a direction of identifying the risk. And it seems to me that the risk is, it goes back to the difference between the Constitution that prohibits for water rights, water sources of supply, and water works, and the code that allows water works, cities to provide surplus water works. That, to me, that says infrastructure. And to me, that says the risk is water supply. What happens one day when we get an extreme drought for several years in a row, and a city has a number of retail connections outside its boundaries, and its sources of supply reduce to the point where they only have enough yield to serve the residents within the city? That, to me, is the risk. The city then would have an obligation to deliver what limited yield of its water sources or water rights is available first to its residents. And if there's not enough left for the others, that's the risk. There's no water supply for them, even though the water works, the pipes, the infrastructure in the ground, and the city will operate them.
There's just no water to deliver it.
I mean, I think
that's
there's
not how we'd operate.
Yeah.
If everybody's taking a haircut, it would be across the board.
Right. You could argue that that's one way of interpreting this, but it doesn't say, even in the Constitution, that you have to prefer your citizens above other people. You do have to provide water to them, but it doesn't say you have to prefer them. And Pauline's been raising her hand for a minute, so I don't want to.
That's okay. Go ahead.
But
she'll remember.
I mean, from my perspective, first of all, I think most systems that serve outside their boundaries are similar to what Salt Lake did, just maybe not on the same scale. Water was there, it was available, and it made sense for somebody to connect. That doesn't necessarily mean that each city would necessarily operate the same way, or each service district that provides surplus water outside of its boundaries. I mean, this is more than just cities.
Yes, it is.
And so anybody who's providing water outside of their recognized boundary really has the same issue at play here. And I don't want to undersell it, but I also don't want to oversell it, because I don't think we have experience of mass water shortages because some city council decided to cut people off. That's not to say, though, that in certain circumstances, somebody might not say, look, you guys really need to develop your own system. We've done our part for a long time, but you now need to do that. And so maybe part of the answer, and I don't want to get into too much of specific potential answers, is that there's a period of time before you terminate somebody's service that they're allowed to go out and find their alternative source or to develop another source, right? I mean, there's way too many variations to expect a single statute or series of statutes to answer all those questions, but we just, I think, from my perspective, need to focus on the framework of how we treat people fairly, how we reduce the risk that Representative Coleman's talking about, but that we still maintain flexibility for those things to be applied, you know, to be applied locally. And another potential point of discussion is, you know, maybe there are service areas that cities identify or districts identify outside of their boundaries, and maybe a service area gets treated differently than just a random person who happens to be receiving water. I don't know. I mean, there's more than one answer. It's not just either you're going to get cut off or you're going to get water. I think
Correct.
There's a lot more there that we need to be thinking about.
Yeah.
The fact that we don't know is what is scary.
Well, we need better rules than we got now.
The fact that we don't have that solid answer should be terrifying to people in our arid state, frankly. Hopefully we get those answers. I'm concerned that we don't, and that we do just have to make, like, I'm concerned that maybe there isn't a solid constitutional position for this, and we just have to make public policy to drive this. That might be where we end up. But I hope that we can get more legal answers so we know what the risk is. So there, to me, I mean, there is the logistics of water supply, but there are definitely legal components to this that impact the risk. We don't know. It's scary to me that we don't know this.
There's lots of things we don't know legally.
Yeah.
I know, and they are scary.
We don't know legally.
But this one.
And we don't always answer them until we have to. I'm not saying we shouldn't address the issue. I'm just saying there are some things, because look, Rusty, me, whoever else's attorneys around here, I mean, we're paid to look at the list of all the crazy things that can happen and try to mitigate as much as possible. But sometimes we just can't answer all the questions immediately, and so we do have to work on that process.
So I would like to ask this group to do one thing. Well, we're going to ask this group to do a lot of things.
Don't live in under one. Yeah.
Okay, this is the one heavy on my mind right now. Is I hope that we can approach this. Now, the lawyers in the room, who are the lawyers in the room? Okay, so you have clients, so you have obligations, but you represent a client. I get that, but I hope this group can lay aside their biases as much as possible, and that when we are looking at the problems and the solutions, we're not simply looking to conform to what's happening, because that may not be the best public policy. it may be the best public policy. It may be the best thing that we conform policy to what's happening if we find that that is, if it's not. I hope that's what we can do on this committee, is lay our stuff aside and not simply try to move the committee to conform to where our particular interests lie, but to look at the greater interests of the state of Utah. The state of Utah, its citizens, collectively, multi-generationally, your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids. I hope that that's where we can go. My biggest concern is that it's hard for us to do that. I don't have any water interests. I just want to turn on my shower and my sink and it run, you know? I also like green grass. But I that's what I would ask of this committee, is to your best degree, look for the future, look for the best public policy, even if it doesn't conform to what your clients or your cities, your municipalities are doing. Let's find the best solution for this. I would ask for that commitment from this committee.
I think everyone in this room wants to do the right thing by the people they serve. I don't think there's any malicious nature behavior right. in this process.
And I don't mean to imply that. I just,
Yeah, but I just want it understood out of the chute. But that doesn't mean historically there haven't been issues. One of the issues that when this legislation first cropped up, I was asked to do some research, and they've asked me about the historical information that we were involved in. So I went back and I pulled a lot of the data. But in that process, in all this fairness that we want to be able to provide to people, I found a memo on a Granite community's website. And that memo dealt with water and the right to use of water for that unincorporated area. And in that memo, it actually had a line that said they didn't have a legal right to water. That's how it was stated. None of us would have allowed a memo like that to even be posted or be sent or be drafted. So in fairness, there are things happening that maybe we need to look at the definitions of the service. Constitutional, yes, but I think a lot of this could be defined by rulemaking, policies, and correct definitions. The state of Utah in the water business doesn't have a lot of definitions for how do we define the use of water, how do we define surplus, or maybe surplus shouldn't even be an issue. Once after 1935, when Metropolitan Water District was created to help funnel the surplus water outside its own jurisdiction of Salt Lake City, they developed a large service base, and that was east of 13th to 78th South, and it's retail. So do you consider, one of the questions is, do you consider that service within, does the city of Salt Lake consider that area that it serves outside its jurisdiction part of its service area, its service area? If so, do you also include that area in your 40-year plan that we're required to do for the state of Utah? There are a lot of little definitions and information that we need to be researching as to, in order to be fair, we have to have the same message. You can't have a website posting a memo with that drastic a statement. I can produce that memo. I never say anything in public. I don't have the documentation for it. I've been doing this since 1991, the water issue. The first people I went to look for help is when Richard was a very young man. And Dave Olgard, we had a meeting, and we begged for assistance. And we were housewives, and we didn't know how complicated and how serious this issue was. The state of Utah knows of our involvement. But there are there's a list of questions we've put together that ought to be asked on behalf of a water user. and they all go to fairness. And as long as one memo is out there that makes a statement like that that's actually in writing, we've heard the rumors over the years, but it's in writing, folks. And we have to address the mentality that went and goes. Where does that come from? Somebody generated that on behalf of municipality. And it's long before some of us were even involved in the cities that they're involved in. So as long as that memo is out there, we've got a problem. And the residents that are your customers need to have assurances that you're not going to turn it off. But that was used in the context of the city has prior right for that water service. But in 2014, they were told they didn't have a legal right to that water.
And we brought this up in the committee hearings over this bill, disparate treatment, too, where there's disenfranchisement of a different treatment of the extraterritorial users, and the disenfranchisement of not being able to affect through elections and so forth the governors of that water distribution. So
taxation without representation.
So that's another issue that was part of the bill that's should be part of this discussion too.
Mm-hmm. So really, there should be a build-out in Salt Lake City. It's an idea. Shouldn't Salt Lake City have an idea what their build-out is? So if they have surplus water over and above that build-out, I'm sure that's what they've done. But I guess
there may have been different things. They may have thought that was going to be part of their city at one time when they were serving it.
Variety of things, but really it goes back to the key of having revoked. So if they've supplied water, what they need to do is make sure those people they're supplying water to understand that it's for in perpetuity and they've got the water. Really? Isn't that it, really? Isn't that the core issue, Richard? Kind of?
I think that's what drinking water would care about. I think a lot of the divisions would care about that. The end users absolutely would care about that. How do we affect that is probably one of the policy positions we need to arrive at.
If they've supplied the water, it appears, and of course, you've got these attorneys, you know, the Supreme Court would tell you, but it seems to me that if you supplied that water, you supplied the water.
Well,
you're there. How do you take it back?
And you may not take it back, but your end plan may be different. In their case, I think they intend to continue to supply them. I think Ogden City has some users up the canyon that they wish they'd find their own source.
I'm just saying every place is going to not be the same.
Yeah.
In some situations, yeah, you serve them and you expect to serve them forever. In other situations, it really probably is an interim basis deal. And that's another reason why I think wholesale versus retail is a big deal. But even in the retail context, you may not really intend for that to go forever, but you shouldn't be able to cut somebody off like that and say you're done, good luck, you know, you're
out.
See,
no new water. All the cheap water is gone. Water is over-allocated as it is. So it's not fair to say, well, now if you don't like our rules, you have to go somewhere else. So where are you going to go? Nevada?
No, they're.
I'm being facetious.
And then the question of the maintenance of the infrastructure. So, if that's interim, if we look differently at what that supply side looks like, who maintains that infrastructure? Who's obligated?
Right,
I'm going to be the first one to ask a dumb question. Okay. How do we define surplus water? Because I think we are mingling a lot of issues in here.
So you went there first.
Because what I see is there are a lot of water systems that supply water outside their boundary, But that water right used is not surplus water rights. They use the water they actually have to serve outside their boundary. So I see this as two separate issues, but it got mingled together. One is surplus water versus the service outside of a water system's boundary. Those two things, they are not totally equivalent, because we have surplus water that can be served inside a city boundary. Or, so I think, can we go back to the basics? Let's define what's a surplus water. Is the issue related to the water rights that can be revoked? Or is the issue related to the service outside of the typical boundary? Those are two different things. So what's the definition of surplus water?
Goes to your build out.
Yeah.
Or maybe what you're allowed to do. That's what we don't know.
Yeah. I mentioned that it seems to me that the risk is source of supply or the water rights yield diminishes and is not enough. And so the question, yeah, for surplus, it's a, I think it means, it would have to mean that that on the demand side, the demand is known, like Ed was saying, come up with some build out a demand. And then the supply side, there's enough supply to meet that demand. And it seems so simple over the last, previous years, but we're just on the supply side, the yield that you can rely upon, our understanding of that is evolving and changing with some recent alarming climate changing data. Even at Jordan Valley, where we thought we had X supply we could count on no matter what, 50 years from now, 40 years from now, the studies are showing that it may not be that. It may be 90% of that. And as you look at in the big picture in the western states, it's the question of sustainable development. And you look at Southern California, Southern Nevada, that have issued more building permits than they have water supply. They've gone beyond sustainability, and now they're trying to, and they've been living on other states' Colorado River allocations. Now they're trying to work back to within what they can live within. We don't ever want to get in that position. Utah, I think we always want to be sustainable. Be sure that we have enough water supply to meet projected demands. And so it seems to me that's the question, and that's the risk. We think, in each case, we think we know what the demand is, and we think we know what the supply is going to be, but that the demand is changing with conservation and with demographic shifts, and the water supply is changing from what we thought it was too, and that's where we need to figure out the right public policy and be sure we never go the route of Southern California and Southern Nevada, go beyond our resources.
Can I just say, speaking on that, if there are those that are subject matter experts and outside resources that you'd like to invite to future meetings, you're sure welcome to do that, and we'll help facilitate that. And before you leave, would you try and set a time and date for the next meeting, and if possible, an agenda? And we'll get all that out on the website. Okay. Agendas could come later, but if you can't, thank you all for being here. We appreciate it.
And we probably tried your patience long enough today, and so we probably ought to be wrapping up soon.
Right.
I know it's not. I think it's an hour off, isn't it? So let's, I have a suggestion for our next meeting. Is Cameron going to come? Do you know?
I think he's planning on. He had a conflict today that he had to leave early because he was in an opening meeting that he had to leave, right?
Okay. So to the extent that we can, if we could get the results of their survey by our next meeting, that would be helpful. And if Ying-Ying, if we could get the wholesale piece that we know. And Pauline, if there is a bunch of information from previous work on this issue that we could make available to everyone, that would be helpful. I'd be happy to put it up on our website.
I thought maybe we would get Fred Finlinson in. I know he was assigned to a committee, but also as an expert because he chaired that committee. And that committee, there were so many lawyers in there. There was so much money going towards it. And it generated, there was an analysis from outside inside city use of water by Salt Lake City. So there's a lot of detail and a lot of data out there. And there was also the reasonings why the PSC did a ruling. It's a couple of page document. And that was in our case that we won before the Public Service Commission. So there are a couple of things out there and that would be helpful.
If you could funnel those to me, I'll either put them on the website or mail them out as a starting.
We also have a list of questions that if we get into the details of what are the systems really doing, we have a list of questions that would be helpful to get answered. Because that's at the heart of serving the public. Like I said, I come from a water user standpoint, and that's why we created a system that was totally gave the water users what they wanted. We wanted no taxes, cost-based rates, and the charges paid for the service. So yes, we have a governmental entity, but I think we're one of the only ones that don't tax for water that our rate base covers.
I don't know that that's the case for most municipal systems. I don't think there's a lot of taxation going on for water in municipalities.
Point of Representative Coleman, so as we're wrapping up, where do you want us to meet? I think
it was pretty clear in the interim committee that the desire was to meet on the Hill, that it was a legislative prompted, something of an inquiry, something of an oversight piece, something of sort of the working group effort as well. So I'd like to have that on the Hill. It makes it more accessible. We had someone testify that it's an accessibility thing. It's easy to record and it's easy. The access is easy. So I thought that was fairly clear.
Do you know when you want us to get together? I guess that's where I'm going to. We want to work around here.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I can make rooms available here. I don't know when we can have availability at the Capitol. I don't care myself. I'm happy to meet either place.
The two of you and then the rest of us.
Yeah.
What's the recording also? There's a lot of background noise in this room.
Yeah.
And I didn't bring my recorder today, but I have a good recorder that I could record here. So I can make that work. Yeah, they have better equipment there.
Do you have a time frame in mind, or you'll let us know, I guess? Or
well, you thought maybe twice a month was.
And that's, I don't know how much time you have to dedicate, but I thought if we're going to get there, we're probably going to have to meet fairly often. But maybe, I've debated different times, different things, wondered if we could do some exchange of information electronically and avoid meeting as much. I don't know. What are your feelings, thoughts?
I mean, keeping in mind the really weighty issues that we talked about, none of these are easy or quick.
Would you prefer to meet more often? Would you prefer to try to communicate electronically some?
For you, Representative Coleman, and as Mike Styler mentioned, having something in September, right, a document and the preferences if, and being a legislator, you could say that's something that ought to have turned into a bill at that time frame. That sounds like a long ways off and is not.
It's really not. It's going to fly. What if we kind of on the front end have an escalated, see how fast we progress and then see. If we can share electronically, but then
no point in having a meeting until we get his survey.
Well, we can meet and maybe talk about, I don't know if we need to identify, we've talked about a bunch of issues. I don't know if we need to identify what issues we want to talk about. The survey will hopefully go out in the next week. So in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we might not actually have, the league might not have good information back, or not detailed, complete information. But I don't want to say we shouldn't meet for a month, because that's probably way too long to go out there.
Particularly if Representative Coleman's first step was just gathering information, setting that up, you know, that's pretty easy. And it's controversial in terms of, you know, all the different systems. And maybe that might help drive sort of the nuances between different groups, you know, municipal providers versus water consumers. Bill seems like a good starting place.
Should we focus on that for our next meeting and just talk about the bill and what works and what doesn't?
Or do you want to try and meet in 3 weeks, but with the idea that, so hopefully the league can have some information, but then expect to maybe meet a little bit more frequently than that? I don't know. I mean,
It seems like we can go other places without that information, without that piece. I mean, we identify several things here. Your survey is to find out the extent to which it's happening and who's doing it. I think we can still discuss the problems inherent in it,
right,
even without knowing the extent. So I think we can start moving on some of those questions. I'd like to see Paulina's questions, that she, if she can share those questions and concerns, that will you share them electronically?
Sure. With, yeah, you gotta give them to me and I will.
And Boyd can distribute, and then
those are basics for the water users to understand.
Okay.
Equity and fairness issues.
Okay, so this is good for any of you that this applies to. If you could even look through those, and
I'll send those out, and if you could look through those and come prepared to talk a little about that next meeting, we can do that. And then if you would look through the bill and come prepared to talk about things in the bill as it ended up that work and don't work from your perception. Okay.
And we'll do some analysis of that list, group them into different groups, you know, like cities, towns, or a very small water systems. They are not in the municipality category. We can do that. Another thing we may be able to offer is a conceptual proposal how the division intends to address the, we call it tenements of the water system, is we try to identify the service boundary of the water system. It was not clearly defined in our current rule, but the AG office is helping us to draft the rule to identify, in the case, for example, if a water system supply water to some connections outside of city boundary, and from Division of Drinking Water's point of view, see who takes care of which part of pipe. Is the, you know, to identify the operation and maintenance responsibility, and we can share the conceptual proposal, and we have not release that to the public because it's all conceptual, but I think that's why I made a comment, say if we're talking about the service area outside of the city boundary, the Division of Drinking Water is working on that to address that, and the guiding principle is similar to electricity or cable service. Typically it's up to the meter. The meter defines the boundary, and the attorney said, well, that's typical utility service contracts based on that. It makes sense for water service to be similar to the, you know, electricity meter, you know, defines a boundary, the same thing. So that's what we can mention in the next meeting. But that's what I asked the question, what's the definition of surplus water? Are we talking about the water rights issue? Are we talking about surplus? I mean, do we...
And I'm just talking about what's in the statute that that I hand out. Well, the one I handed out doesn't define it. It just says if it is surplus, this is what you can do.
I think what the biggest problem is, there's a lack of definition, as I said before, of what is water service to each of us. What does it mean? The public can't understand it if we don't define it. Once it's defined, it can be managed, and it can be fair. But until, right now we have an arbitrary system. There isn't enough, the state makes rules based on every law that's passed, but there are no definitions. Water is a very nebulous product being served to the public. I have my own ideas. Tom has his. Richard has his. None of us see it the same way. And I think if there's uniformity of what's required for that service, because it is a service. We have water users. It isn't just entities that own. You're affecting the public. And that's why we went after PSC jurisdiction, because we were going to be negatively impacted. We were going to pay for the purchase of that system for the city. The city wasn't going to pay for it. We were. Our rates were going to go up to the point where we were the only constituents that were going to be paying for that system to be purchased, for that bond to be paid off. So that's how we got involved, and that's where the anxiety and the upset and the anger came from. But none of those people are here today. I'm one of the few that's here. Paul Ashton came in later after that whole issue was settled.
Ordinance, all the concerns.
Jeff Appel was our attorney.
How we want to move this
along. I agree on that issue of the definitions. I have a question, maybe for the attorneys in the room in the broader sense. I think to Representative Coleman's statement about this issue of how do you treat someone who's within a city or outside the city? We've got this constitutional statutory definitions. And I'm hearing that at least in practice, and maybe hasn't been tested by the courts, if it came down to there's not enough water, how are we going to treat those inside our city, outside our city, maybe another city that we're selling water to? The question I would ask is, take us to 100 years from now, and there is scarcity of that resource, and we're told there's not enough water. Would it be okay to treat those contracts, that service to customers, equally, right? That's the question I'm hearing. Is it, and I think that maybe then does beg a little bit of tinkering with the statute or the Constitution. But I think that's addressing your concern. So there's certainty of what happens when, and it might not be. We don't need to wait for climate change to create this. All we need is a wonderful fire up in the Frodo River system, and that entire supply is not available for drinking water for about a year or two. That's what happened on the eastern front in Colorado. A smaller district, well, it was a big district, but it wasn't as big. So I'd like to hear how we could accomplish, because I think that would be a big step forward for your issue, Representative Coleman, at least understand where we'd sit, and from a practical standpoint, then legal, and then statutory and policy, as you said. It's a big question that if we ask now, we can help author it, or a wildfire will help us solve it in the courts. But it's a draft of that.
I know lots of lawyers. I've had to get
well, that's the problem. I think we can invite a whole bunch of lawyers and get a whole bunch of opinions.
They're not necessarily solving the case.
Well, let me throw an example. I used a professional engineering practice in Washington State. They had a community that basically sold the farm. They sold the water rights, went dry, so the legislature passed a law, two parts of it. This has been 20 years since I practiced up there, but
required in their water master plan to be done updated every 10 years and show that they have water contracts with guaranteed amounts or water rights to meet their need, right? And it changes. And so those are the two elements. They have to have, it has to get updated because things change. I think, as Richard mentioned, our supply reduces, but yet our conservation is improving. But if we have equal treatment, that allows us to respond the day after the legislation is signed, if there is legislation. If something changes, if we're doing equal treatment and we have less supply or more customers, we're treating everyone the same. I think that's what you're, part of what you're looking for, at least.
I think that's one possible solution, and that the maintenance of the infrastructure along with that. So there's reliability.
But can I just, as a thought, and I know we've gone long and I'll be done, but see, here's where, if I'm the city, and I've got to be careful if I'm going to give a contract outside my boundary, that I have no way to collect to make sure my infrastructure and my repair and replacement is going to be sound. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So for us, down in Washington County, we have a county-wide property tax that helps us with that infrastructure. So if I would be hard-pressed to sell any water to anybody that's not going to contribute to that, making sure my infrastructure is going to be all right.
Believe me, they're collecting enough money.
Well, but you see my point.
Oh, absolutely.
And those contracts need to be sound. Because if I'm a citizen of Salt Lake City and they're selling surplus water, and I think they're selling it too cheap, I'm going to be...
Yeah, I'm all over them.
I'm going to be at city council saying, what on earth did you guys sell outside our district for that's costing me money now because these guys aren't paying their fair share?
And that's part of that fiduciary duty to loyalty to your citizens, right?
That's my point.
And so what happens, again, like we have, this came up in the hearings as well, we have more cities that are in positions that are close to becoming cities of the first class that have a little bit more ability to control water sources than others. And so what happens to new development if the existing water holders say, well, sure, yeah, we don't want to stretch our supply to you. So, you know, so what happens there? Where, what is there a responsibility at the state level to manage distribution of water resources? Well, when you have all these shares that people own. So, city could say that. You could say, we're not distributing to Copperton as Copperton grows, because that's a risk to our users or whoever, if it was a municipal source. So then what? Do we halt the economic development in the state too? Do we say nobody moves here anymore and Facebook, you can't have your data center? So what do we do? I mean, those are generational questions that I think are incumbent upon us now to look outside of our own, you know, interests in our own municipalities and who we work for and who we represent, but just bigger issues.
There's another issue that goes with this, and it's like an implied contract. When the state says you have to prove you have the capacity to serve, that came about within the last 8 years. For the first time, I actually heard the state say to water systems, you have to be able to prove you have the capacity to serve. Okay, and if you have the capacity to serve, you have somebody coming to you and with a development and a connection or two or three or 300, and they say, okay, the health department says I need a water letter from you to say you have the capacity to serve me. To me, that's sort of an implied contract also. Then you've gone beyond I am the water holder. You're now sharing and saying, yes, and you sign a letter that says you have the right to get water and I have the capacity to serve you. That goes to a financial burden that development got banking loans based on me saying, yes, I can provide a service. If I now say, no, I need that over here because I've now added this many more properties to my water system and I need your water back, you've now put this development at risk. There are many, many hidden issues with the whole way we deal with water. and it has to be dealt with.
Can I just offer some clarification? Division of Drinking Water requires water system to do capacity assessment. It's just so we want to help the water system manage growth. So when we do the water system capacity analysis, basically the water system's job is to track the number of connections they currently serve and the number of connections they are obligated to serve, including the well-served letter. So we don't give the water system the flexibility to say, oh yeah, I promised I'll serve him 5 years ago. I changed my mind. I'm going to take that away. I'm going to serve
someone else. The problem was the people on the street feel that are in the surplus situation always have the anxiety that the day will come, because there's many actual instances out there where people have been told, if I need water, if I have a drought, I'm holding it back. I've actually seen contracts from 1978, agreements that were done when I actually was 87, when Sandy left Jordan Valley. There is an agreement out there, or a statement, a memo out there, that if the city has the requirement for the water, then it will be cut off and moved. It even mentions the Northwest Quadrant in that old memo. I've shared that memo with several people. So we don't know what we've all agreed to in the past, but those things are going to come back and bite us, because they're out there. And the new people who don't know they exist, we need to look at the old agreements and see where things are. Do they have a qualified water, quantity of water to service those properties? But you can't now say the whole East Bench is going to be, because I need the water over here, I'm going to take that water away. That's the danger, whether we want to say it or not. It's in written documents out there.
Well, I think we've touched the surface and know the depth of the issue we're into. Let's set another date, and I'll get out an agenda, and if the assignments we all already have talked about, if you can get the information back on those so we can circulate it, that would be helpful. I'm thinking the week of June 17th. Is that a possibility?
What's the date?
I haven't picked a day yet. Sometime during the week of June 17th. Is that a good week or a bad week?
Is that the second or third Wednesday?
It's the third week.
Is there
a day that's better in the week than another for you?
20th is interim, so...
So I'm in interim.
So we'll be in interim.
We're talking time of day, too.
What about...
Mornings?
So will interim be over by Thursday? They don't do it on Thursday, right?
They don't do interim Thursday, but the legislature's going to the White House on Thursday and Friday.
Okay. Maybe I picked the wrong week here.
Monday or Tuesday?
Monday, Tuesday, okay. How's Monday or Tuesday for the rest of
it? 18 would work for me.
Monday or Tuesdays are best for me.
Okay. Morning or afternoon?
4-3 works for me.
Like
on both days. Up to 3.
I like mornings.
So I have higher education
for drinking water. Both of us are gone those 2 days.
We'll be happy to send you the files.
Okay.
Send it electronically and maybe have someone else represent.
Okay.
Drinking water.
Is that Monday? What time?
Monday's good for me.
Monday's okay.
Tuesday.
So how about Monday morning at 10? Would that work?
The
18th.
No, we don't know when the task force will be in the end.
No, we don't. Find that out in another half hour or so.
Those who
what
travel
did you say?
Far, be
ten
to coordinate them.
be here.
And I'd be happy to bring a phone and phone conference here if you don't want to travel up. I can do that too.
We can assume here.
And I
No.
Do you want to go to the Capitol this meeting, or do you want to see what bring availability after that?
I think so. Are there people that would be traveling to interim anyway? Should we do it on the? Is it helpful to have it the day before, or?
I don't know. Would that be better to do it on interim day, or the people that would help?
Or the day before?
What day is that?
The 19th. But Tuesday the 19th. I have obligations during the afternoon, but the morning would work on the 19th also.
So they put the appropriations committee meetings on the morning of the 19th. So they're backing them up against the interim meetings.
Yeah.
Is your interim meeting that morning?
Well, we have a sub-appropriation meeting in the afternoon.
So maybe Monday's still better.
Let's stick with Monday at 10, if that's all right, if that can work.
Monday at 10?
Yeah. And do you want to get a room up there, or do you want me to do it here?
We can get a room.
Okay. Plan on the Capitol, and I'll send out email and let you know where. Okay?
So that's the 18th?
The 18th, 10 a.m. Thank you all for your patience. And
you.
I know we probably spent a little longer than you planning, so thanks.
I don't wonder you talking to me. Thank you so much, boys.
Thank you.
Way to control this. Maybe with a firm hand, boys.
Yeah, you know that won't happen.
Yeah.
If we could stay myopic, surgical, we can't go too far.
Just where we're going here.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out, how to get so big you can't control anything.
We've got to be careful that the little thing we do doesn't have reverberation.
Sure.
Yeah.
So can we just get back to the bill?
And that's what I'm hoping is...
Can we get accomplished something pretty close to what the bill was trying to do?
The original bill.
Well, she won't be satisfied with that long term. That's the one challenge.
Yeah.
She wants more than just information. And even when she said, oh, maybe what we'll come back with is no bill, that's just for this session.
Yes.
In my mind, I think the definition thing, I mean, gets us part of the way there. You have a defined service area, and it's just in the city. Maybe go to the districts and kind of look at how you define some of the things and the obligations you make. And kind of, and that's maybe like what Representative Coleman said, don't be so fixated with the old contracts we have.
I said it cost us
Well, if we're going to adopt a service area, what are the consequences of creating a service area that includes more than your geographical boundary, whether you're a district or a city? If you say, I'm going to serve this area, what does that mean?
I think I'm looking at Richard, because I think you have mostly wholesale, a little bit of retail, but for your wholesale, I think that gives an example for both, in my mind. You'll have a city and you'll say,